What's that?
BNO meeting, May 24th, 2019.
Morning, everybody. This is the May 24th, 2019 meeting of the Board of Land and Natural Resources. It's 9:18 a.m. Thank you for being here. We're going to start by reading, I'll just read, the standard contested case statement. In some of the matters before the board, a person may wish to request a contested case hearing. If such a request is made before the board's decision, then the board will consider the request first before considering the merits of the item before it. A person who wants a contested case may also wait until the board decides the issue, then request the contested case after the decision. It's up to you. Any request must be made orally by the end of the meeting and followed up in writing within 10 days. If no request for contested case is made, the board will make a decision and the department will treat the decision as final and proceed accordingly. First up, we have minutes of February 22, March 8, and May 10, 2019. Do we have everybody who was at those meetings?
Yes.
Okay, so does anybody have any comments that you haven't already submitted? Yes. Which one are you on?
I think I'm on the second one.
March 8?
Yeah. Excuse me, I'm on February 22nd.
Okay.
So, we had the Hokulea, Chris made some suggestions in about a little beyond the middle of the page. Ewan noted that there should be, and I think he wanted to say, there needs to be some kind of a paper record of in the record to provide access. And this was a Kuleana right, but the sentence isn't complete. There's a word missing there.
Okay. And I don't know where that.
This is D4.
D4. Okay.
D4.
Thank
and
you.
Right in the middle of the right side page, Ewan noted there should be something in the record to provide access. So maybe you could ask Chris what that is.
I'll go back to the tape.
Yeah. But other than that, I got a few typos.
Okay,
here and there, but I'll just give that
give
to
those to her. Okay,
thank
anybody
you.
Else have anything on February 22 minutes?
Nope.
Anything on March 8 minutes? Anything on May 10 minutes? Any public testimony on the minutes? If not, is there a motion to approve February 22 as amended?
Move to approve. Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Is there a motion to approve March 8 and May 10?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much. Okay, first up we have item D. One.
Good morning, Chairperson, Board Members, Ian Harold Collins, GLNR Land Division. First off, I'm going to just pass out additional photos of the subject area for reference. I noticed they weren't in the submittal, and also the applicant will has additional materials.
Somebody needs to be on mute.
Oh, I can't hear it, but...
No, we can hear you.
Thank
you. Maybe turn the volume down.
Everybody... Yeah.
Whoever is listening in, we can hear you.
Can you mute
yourself? Your phone? Okay.
Good thing.
Okay, so this is a request for the board to approve. This is a request for the board to approve a term non-exclusive easement to the Waioli Valley Tarahui for surface water and irrigation system. It's in the Honolulu Valley on Kauai. What how this came to our attention was that the County of Kauai was working on a lot of sort of restoration and repair remediation projects for the last April, the floods, and they brought this to our attention that the diversion system had been damaged. Now, the diversion system is actually located on a state parcel. It diverts water from the Waioli Stream and serves a group of Carroll farmers down further down Makai, the parcel in the valley. But the farmers themselves are located on private parcels, so the system provides water on a state stream to the private farmers. So the county is going to assist the farmers with the initial repair, but being that the system largely is on state land, we worked with the farmers to seek out an easement for them, so they would have after the initial repair is done, they'll have the ability to maintain an ongoing repair, maintenance, operation of the system. They'll be responsible and keep that going. Regarding the diversion of water from state land, the staff will continue to work with them on an appropriate disposition, but we felt that it was kind of more important to maybe sort of separate this one, because at the end of the day, processing the easement now will allow the farmers to sort of more have that opportunity to conduct ongoing repair and maintenance. And from the way the system is designed and constructed, that needs to happen because they need to sort of access the system and do regular sort of clearing of vegetative debris. And how I believe it was the Manawai was designed, which is the primary diversion structure. It's actually designed to break apart after heavy rain or flooding, so they need the access and the ability to go in there and sort of rebuild it after that. So we didn't want to necessarily delay that ability while we're working on the water disposition. Also, we want to note is that the farmers have created a nonprofit HUI that's a qualified 501c3 entity. So we're requesting the board to approve the disposition at gratis, since they, you know, and the HUI will sort of oversee the management of the system. And my understanding is that they'll also be the applicant for the water lease. And what I've provided additionally into the submittal is an overlay of the parcel, so you kind of get a sense of where the stream is located on the state parcel, as well as some photos of the Po'owai and the Awai. We don't have any photos of the Manawai because it's largely sort of gone from the floods, but that's what the photos we have of the secondary diversion and the Awai ditch. And we'll go for any questions.
So I noticed you don't have a photo of our excellent site visit here, where four of us, I think it was Ian and Cardi and Linda and I, were literally up to our knees in mud.
I should credit Wesley, who's Wesley as well.
And I think I slipped three times in the stream, but I survived. Anyway, it was great, and I really appreciate everyone who helped orient us to this site. Okay, questions, board members?
No question, but I have a comment. It's always really gratifying to me when you find a pre-contact Hawaii system that is still usable and in use with a group who's willing to maintain it and use it for the purposes that it was intended. And so I'm absolutely delighted to see this item on the agenda.
Sam?
I got a fair number of questions. By way of background, Senate is talking about how to appropriately lease out low E and low E access. There's some talk in the governor's office going on right now about the same subject. So it's kind of appropriate that we have this one here today. The comment that I listened to, and I was getting lobbied on this idea as well. We have this position on this is under 171.13.2
and it says grant easement by direct negotiation or otherwise for a particular purpose, and it says in perpetuity on such terms as may be set up by the board, subject to revert or so forth and so forth. So this disposition on 171.13 appears to be, it says disposition of public lands. Public lands is also defined in 171-1 as all natural resources, including water. So the discussion is, why don't we use 171.13.2 as a vehicle for the Aulalohe? Because it's not a consumptive use, right? It takes from the stream, goes back to the stream. And many Lohis are small farmers. We don't have any EIS issues. We have a form for exemption on EIS issues. We also have a problem that we don't know the stream flow in all of these streams because Seaworm hasn't established them. However, it is an opportunity to bypass the public auction under 171.58. And that might be useful. The board members are pretty familiar with, and the chair, pretty familiar with some of the important Lohis around the state. So how do you feel as one of the administrators about using 171.13.2 as a vehicle for, we don't need to call them leases, we can call them easement dispositions or something like that, so that we don't end up in litigation, say that we're trying to make an end run around the public auction provisions of 171.58, and it doesn't have to go to the legislature for approval or disapproval. And it makes it a lot quicker for the Lohi owner. And because it's a non-consumptive use, it is an opportunity for us to set up a model reasonably soon to take care of all the Lohis all over the state. We've got all the counties get this problem. So, you folks had any discussion about this?
I think I think first off, the applicant of the Hui is going to do an application for a water disposition of some sort.
Okay.
And we need to, I think at that point, do some homework on our side, you know, with Seaworm and definitely with the AG's office on that option. I don't think I would say that we wouldn't do it, but I think we definitely have to have much more thorough discussions on what our options are under the law.
I agree with that. And the legislature recognizes that this is a novel approach, as that's what I hear from the staff, and so they're probably going to be talking about it too. They have an interim thing with the land department on water issues. So anyway, just to get that out there, I think that this is a new idea that we need to explore. This one here is a good one because of the fact that it's a 501c3. And so the leasehold doesn't have to be expensive. It could be nominal rent because it's an eleemosynary association. And for Lohis, many of them are in this fashion. The one by Haena, remember the discussion, I can't remember, somebody Wickman, was it Wickman? That they were talking about that they have a 501c3 down there. So, for discussion. But there are some other sections of the statute that we should take a look at. 171.58 has provisions in it relating to conditions that might be useful, that we need to pay attention to, and maybe as you folks work through this, you folks take a look at some of the rather confusing provisions of 17158, and you have to decide whether or not we've got to have EISs or you get an exemption. It appears to be the main problem we have with this particular low E is the repair and maintenance. The areas all bust up from the, you know, the storm and whatever. So this idea that they're going to work on the repair and maintenance of the area, that's a benefit to the state, because generally if it's a state ditch or state pipe or state easement, whatever it is, where the water goes, the state has responsibility in that area to repair and maintenance. And so that's why the state sets the lease at a certain amount so that we can do that repair work, because you can't have a low E with the water running all over the place. You have to have it, you know, appropriate. So this is Tommy's territory. So.
You brought up good ideas, but your ideas that you're bringing up wouldn't work in this case, because right now what they need is immediate action.
Fine.
You know, immediate action is now. You will wait for a legislator to change the law, you're going to try to do it something later on. Yeah, it could take too long, but then easement is the fastest way for them to get what they need to do.
And I'm in favor of that. I think it's the best way, but I think it's also this technique using 17113 may be a model for the whole nine yards. And it may be faster for Tommy's constituents.
Because they're on 501C, they don't have to go to auction to get on lease. They can get on direct lease, correct?
Well, definitely for the base. I mean, I think, like I said, we're trying to separate the sort of the physical infrastructure, right, the irrigation infrastructure versus the water. And I think the water issues we're trying to figure out. That's why we separated it in order to give sort of this immediate ability for the farmers to act.
You know, to me, with the storm that we had, you know, there was a lot of damage to the whole Honolulu Valley. So I think these guys need the fastest way possible for them to work on it. You know, and I think this is the fastest way. Only thing I've noticed, why is it a firm easement?
Just that's the usual. I mean, I think if we figured, okay, well, we'll go 55 years, and that will cover a pretty long time, and we can see what happens when. I mean, I'm sure most, if not all of us, would probably not be here by then, but I figured, you know, that'll cover it for now. We don't normally ask for, you know, unless it's like an access easement, right?
But we did by that time.
Yeah. But I mean, if that's the board's discretion, I mean, you know, perpetuity. Yeah. But I mean, I don't think we have a strong issue either way. It's just we usually don't for these, you know, we just do a term.
And for what I understand is, you know, the Honolulu Valley itself produces the biggest amount of tar in the state of Hawaii. The only guys who produce more than them is Florida. So we got to try to help them out as much as we can.
Yeah. You know, going back to the term, I think, you know, just with the water issue still out there, I think we just want to, I mean, if the board sees otherwise, that's fine, but I think just for now, follow our sort of standard.
According to what I understand or what I read, Florida produces the most tar.
I take it that is a challenge.
I heard
that it was Waipio Valley. Okay, Jimmy.
I think Stan has a good point, you know, that it's a possible vehicle, but I agree with Tommy that we need to get this ASAP. But I, for one, think that to protect our taro farmers, I would like to see that water to be in perpetuity for them. Because of who they are and what they stand for our culture, for the community. I believe that what Stan is saying is a great point, but we'll see if that vehicle would work properly. And maybe, as is said in a standard, maybe that can be a template for the other water issues that we do have on a case-by-case basis.
Right.
So I'm in agreement for this passage of this particular agenda item.
Okay, any other questions? All right.
One of the important things about this low E is that this takes precedence over a lot of other water uses, because this is, low E is a trust use under our constitution. And we have the last case that we had came out of Kauai Springs Inc. versus Planning Commission 2014 decision by the state Supreme Court. That case says that this is a, this is one of the top trust uses. Potable water, the low E's, and natural streams. So this is one of the top three or four. And so it is a appropriate thing for us to do, using this one to give the other low E owners in the state a wake up that this is an area that we're focusing on. And I'm very pleased that Tommy and his people from these islands have worked on this, and with the chair and staff, to get this thing going, because it's important to us.
Okay, any other questions?
No, it wasn't me, was Lyle Capazzo.
Yeah, it's been great.
But okay. I do think that Whitefield Valley get more tarot.
Let's go to public testimony. Okay, first up is...
And what island do you represent, Stan?
Reed.
Good morning, Chair Case and board members. My name is Reed Yoshida, and I am a taro farmer from Hanalei. I apologize, Chair Case, that I wasn't there on your guys' site visit, but I did hear about it after the fact. I am also the president of the Waiwale Valley Taro Hui, and that hui was created as a group of taro farmers that farm within the Waiwale watershed. Almost every single member of the hui is second, third, even fourth generation farmers in Hanalei. For my family, you know, my great-grandpa got here in the late 1800s to work the sugar plantations. My grandpa was born in Hanalei, 1896, started farming rice in the 20s, converted to taro in the 40s, and his brother and his family, and it just kept on going down the line. I still currently live in the house that my grandpa built back in 1933, and my farm is in the same area that he started, you know, almost 100 years ago. And you know what, that story right there, that's typical for a lot of the members, because we all have like long-standing connections to this, to the Waiwale watershed area. During the flood that hit us last April, you know, our model was blown out. There was, you know, vehicle-sized boulders that clogged our channels. Large portions of the Awai was filled with mud, debris, you know, logs and whatnot. And after the floodwaters receded, we had no water coming to our farms at all. A week after, we were able to clear by hand enough of the debris, there's a whole bunch of volunteers that helped us, that we got a minimal amount of water flow back to the farms, just to keep the farms operational. I mean, it's nowhere close to what we had prior, but at least we got that going. You know, every single farmer, not only with our hui, but everyone else within that on the North Shore Kauai, we all had equipment damage. You know, our tractors are fully submerged, lawnmowers gone, chainsaws washed away. And so for me personally, I didn't plant taro for almost 4 months after the flood, you know, because we're just trying to get all of the equipment running. And we're also trying to fix our homes that were damaged. And then between the equipment and the water issues that we've had, there's so much silt that was deposited within all the farms, and that's like the worst thing that we can have for the fields. That our yields this past year, it's been pretty bad. For my personal area, my production is down 40% from compared to my pre-flood productions. And then even with the damage that occurred to our system, just within the past year, we've had different weather systems that have come through. Not major storms, but just different systems that have come through. And we've noticed that every system that passes through, the water tends to take a different path now because the system was so upended. And yet, it just creates more issues for us because now we're chasing it and just trying to maintain the minimum amount of water. Every time a storm comes through, the water is going a different path. It just makes it harder and harder for us. And you know, recently I ended up, unfortunately, I ended up going back to work as an engineer for a contractor on Kauai. You know, it's a career that I walked away from about 7 years ago so that I could concentrate on the farm. Not kind of what the plan was, but, you know, with the low productions, the low yields and whatnot, it was getting hard to provide for the family, you know, especially because there were so much unknowns that was happening. With regards to our hui that we formed, like, this is for the first time ever the farmers within the Waiole watershed have formally organized. We've always worked together over the years, from my grandpa's days and from my uncle's days. The farmers have always worked together to go up to our system and maintain it, preserve it, to make sure that the water is always flowing, clear the debris and whatnot. But as a result of this formal organization that we created, we established a nonprofit number, we obtained the, you know, our federal tax exempt status, because we are committed to just restoring and preserving the resources within Waiole, so that we can continue with taro farming, you know, as a way of life for a lot of people. As a group, when we were doing this, we decided as a collective that we were going to go through whatever legal hoops that we needed to go through, you know, to secure permissions, approvals before any kind of big repair work was started, because we wanted to make sure that we were finally in compliance with any kind of state or, you know, local regulations, and that we followed the right procedures. You know, so it's been over a year now, and everyone is still affected. I'm not going to speak for all the farmers, but, like, for me personally, like, there's this huge burden of just uncertainty, because the way that the system is so fragile, we just weren't sure if we were going to be able to continue farming within our area. And, you know, it's my hope that when the day comes that I cannot physically work the farm, I'm hoping that there's going to be a next generation that's going to follow us. You know, that is going to continue basically what my grandpa started for my family and for me, you know, 100 years ago, pretty much. So I'm asking the board that we need your guys' help today, so that we can move on this and approve the easement, just so that the future generations, they have the same opportunities that I have had, that some of the other younger farmers have had, that we can continue to raise a taro within the Waiole area. So I wanted to thank the board and every one of your staff, and to Ian, you know, for just giving me this chance to talk to you guys today, and for all of the help and support.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yeah.
When the water, the ditch is on state, and then the water comes down through private property, mm-hmm. and you said you have a massive workload in front of you or to repair, what is some of the things that you're going to do that's, you know?
Well, as far as our systems right now, you know, because of all the silt that was deposited, I mean, I was fortunate enough that my particular area, I did have silt that was covering the roads, covering the things, you know, covering the fields and whatnot, but I could kind of repair it. We've had other farmers that they had 12 inches of silt across their entire farm. You know, and for the roadways, that doesn't work, because that silt just doesn't compact and whatnot. So they spent months and months trying to clear it up, rebuild the roads, you know, get the silt out, because it's not good, you know, for the taro as a growing medium.
What about the stream itself? Are you going to the alignment and everything is still going to remain the same? Is just how are you going to shoulder it? Or, I mean, you can't foresee a 100-year flood.
Yeah, storm. I mean, again, we can't foresee a 100-year flood. You know, and that's why the county is kind of taking the lead on that, as far as working with, you know, the Corps of Engineers and whatnot to determine. Again, it's like, if we try to anticipate trying to make this thing strong enough for a 100-year flood, you know, we would never get it done.
Correct.
Because you just can never tell. I mean, there are rocks that ended up within our system that you can't even fathom. How did it even move there?
True.
It wasn't even visually, you couldn't see it anywhere, and then all of a sudden it appeared after the flood. Like, oh, where did this come from? You know, it's like, so I mean, so we're actually we are looking for the county's help on that side, just to kind of figure out the best plan, and they're taking the lead on that for us.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, next up is Joanne and Shorty Kalona.
Good Aloha.
Aloha.
I'm Joanne Kaona, and this is my dad, Clarence Kaona. We are here today to explain to you why this easement is so important to us. We've submitted written testimony, and we are here to just highlight the points. Thank you guys for being here, and thank you for allowing us to be here. I helped my dad farm in Waioli Valley, and he is going to introduce himself and tell his story first.
Okay, I'm Clarence Cohen, everybody call me Shorty. I live with that forever now. But I farmed with my dad back in the 40s. I grew up with him in the tar patch. When he go to work, I work in the tar patch. When he comes home, if I'm not there, the broom is waiting for me. So I've learned, work in the tar patch when you have to. But it's been a life for me, supporting my family. My children all grew up, and I'm very thankful that my dad helping the tar patch. I farm almost about 4.5 acres of taro, and after this flood, I lost about three patches full with taro in. The flood just took the taro away. Right now, I lost another patch because of all the pigs, the wild pigs come down and destroyed the whole patch, took everything, ate everything up. So I'm starting again from the bottom again, one day at a time. And we're having problems with the water, but I think all of us are working together trying to get the water back the way it was back in the days. I appreciate your help, and I thank you for this day.
Thank you.
Okay. I was born and raised on Kauai. Grew up around the taro patch with my dad. I've been helping him for about 14 years. And for me, kalo farming defines our ohana. My dad took over farming from his dad, and his dad took over farming from his dad, so it's kind of my kuleana to take that over and continue and be able to pass that piece of who we are down to further generations. Currently, besides helping my dad, I work at Waipa Foundation, which is a nonprofit in the neighboring Ahupua. And one of our biggest missions there is to create a healthier community. And one of the ways we do that is to ensure that kalo and poi are available, local kalo and poi are available for our community. And about 90% of that kalo comes from these farmers in Waioli Valley. And so after we make the poi, we distribute it around the island. And our kupuna price for poi is $1 a pound. And after the flood, we definitely, our Manawai, Po'owai, and entire Awai system were devastated, and we had to do a lot of repairs, and a lot of repairs continue to be made. And so this is a year and a month later, and for the first time in my dad's 75 years of farming, he ran out of kalo to sell. So that's like the repercussions of the flood. Just from the silt, the damage, the shortage of water, the equipment, and the farmers that came here today are probably some of the hardest working people you'll ever meet. And just because they came here all the way to Oahu kind of shows how important this is to us. For example, my dad hasn't left Hawaii since 2005, when my brother graduated from Kamehameha Schools. So this was a big trip for him. And we're just here today because we need your kokua. Because our mono, our po'owai, and our awai are on state conservation land, we need this easement so that we can continue to do what our ancestors have always done and perpetuate our traditional and cultural Native Hawaiian practices of cultivating wetland kalo. And that's my kuleana to my family.
Aloha, no.
My kuleana to our community and as a Hawaiian.
Good.
Thank you. Thank you, Ian.
Yes.
Thank you. Stan.
My friends call me Shorty. So I know how you feel. And our grandson is Waipa.
Waipa?
Yeah, Waipa family in Hilo. So I want to know how you keep the pigs from going in the low E.
There's no way you can keep them out. Day and night, they know, I guess they know you when you're there and they know when you're not there. That's the bottom
just
line.
Like God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Do you have a brother by the name of Henry?
Henry, that's my brother. He lives down
Kula. He's living Kula in Maui, Henry Ko'ona. You get so much resemblance with that. Maybe family, I don't know. He passed away.
I don't know. I have my brother in
Mililani.
Yeah.
Oh, Mililani.
Name is Henry.
I haven't seen him since 2005. Yeah.
Thank you for being here. Okay, Nathaniel, Tim.
Hello.
Hello.
Here to support the Waioli Taro farmer Hui. I'm part of the Hui, and my name is Nathaniel Tinwong. And basically, being a Taro farmer, being a Hawaiian practitioner, and being a father, it's my duty to practice stewardship and teach that to my daughters, and so we can just live that lifestyle of just being connected, what we do and where we live, and this is just a pretty good example. Just the magic that can happen in these places. So to have the easement access would help continue our duty, you know, for now and for the future. So thank you guys for this time.
Mahalo for taking the time to come all the way here and speak to us.
Thank you very much. Okay, Wayne Tanaka.
Good morning, Chaircase, members of the board. My name is Wayne Tanaka for the Office of Hawaiian Affairs. OHA strongly supports the recommendations before you today. First, just from a big picture perspective, you know, I think we are encouraged and hopeful that the easement represents maybe a new understanding among the state and with communities as to how the public trust can be upheld in and must be upheld in better and new ways. You know, on the state's part, the easement reflects how it can affirmatively protect and enforce Native Hawaiian traditional and customary practices, as well as uphold the other public trust purposes that would be served by the easement. You know, and it's including through land dispositions and partnerships with community. You know, I think for communities, it also provides an example of how partnerships with the state can provide practical benefits, such as those outlined in our testimony, in terms of helping them uphold public trust in their water resources. So I just wanted to note that this is, you know, this represents not only, you know, the perpetuation of timeless cultural practices in Waioli, but also may have implications much more broadly than that. You know, second, we also note, you know, in our testimony that our research shows that the awai at issue in the easement, you know, it certainly existed during the Kingdom era, almost certainly existed prior to Hawaii's contact with Westerners. And so the repair and maintenance activities that are subject of the easement could very easily be arguable in most cases to constitute Native Hawaiian traditional and customary practices in themselves, which, you know, again, the state and the board has duty to protect and enforce. And finally, you know, for many, I think this the flooding event that has led to this situation signals, is just yet another signal of this new era of climate change and impending impacts that, you know, for others might be so unprecedented, so scary that they're unwilling to even accept that climate change exists, much less you know, believe in the need for us to take drastic action to build a climate resiliency and to, you know, protect, you know, ourselves from the future. And along those lines, you know, policymakers and researchers ranging from the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization to, you know, our own local Taro Security and Purity Task Force, even the state legislature has recognized that small farms and indigenous farming methods, indigenous crops, are going to be a critical building block in terms of building climate resiliency and protecting regional food security. And the legislature, I believe in 2015 or so, even directed all state agencies to promote small farms, traditional farming methods, and traditional crops as agricultural priorities of the state. And so by adopting the staff recommendations here, you would also be heeding the call of you know, international and even state and local communities to take steps needed to build our climate resiliency and to ensure the food self-sufficiency and security for ourselves and for future generations. And for those reasons, we respectfully urge that you grant this easement.
Thank you. And I want to say thanks for the extra research you guys did on this. It was very interesting, for starters, and, you know, helpful to support the record.
Oh, yeah, it was very interesting. I didn't do that research. I was a research department, but yeah, it was appreciated.
Yeah, but I also want to thank you for thank Oha for coming forward and reminding us all about the multi-level importance of this particular decision and the precedents that it might set for the future.
Thank you. Okay, Chris Kobayashi.
Aloha, Chair Case and members of the board. Thank you for this opportunity. Sorry, it's a Kauai shake, so. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in strong support for this easement. I'm a Kala farmer and also a member of the Waioli Valley Taro Hui, third generation Kala farmer, born and raised on the farm and house that we live in, that my dad lived in too. About 30 years ago, I made, that was when I made my commitment. My dad didn't know, but I made the commitment to continue farming the legacy of his farm. So I had to quit my other two jobs. Not right away, though, because didn't make a lot of money. So last year, the flood happened last year, and we had one field that was planted before the flood, and we finished planting another field, or that same field after the flood. So that was like in April and May. So this year, and Taro takes a long time to grow, it takes about a year to, you know, several months after, like 15 months. So this year, we finally had the opportunity to kind of go harvest, but the quality of the taro was really bad because of all the silt that everybody's been talking about. But and we had no other fields planted. We were harvesting whatever we had until November, but we couldn't plant any more fields or prep any more fields because our tractors and all our machines were down. So, but having this one field that now is ready, although we can't sell the kalo, it's a wonderful huli bank for us. So we have, just a couple weeks ago, we just started planting our first field for this year. So, and I think that shows a really good example of, like, what happens, like, nature and like how he was talking about climate change, how nature, we're at, it's her element. And she floods. I mean, this is what the farmers have to deal with. We deal with things that are uncertain up there, always. And so, and I want to say that we've been going up to, you know, we walked up with Chair Case, and a few other times we've gone up there to the Mano and Hawaii, and the place is so different after the flood. So, okay, so we've been going up pretty consistently. 2 days ago, I went up and actually took a picture of our kowai, which has the concrete structure on it. And if you look, there's a big tree that's fell down and is leaning on the concrete structure. Prior to that, I mean, the flood had already taken out all the boards that were previously there. But if you look at this one, we had been going up pretty much monthly. And then 2 days ago, we saw this big tree. This is on the last page. This big tree that was falling over. And what I think is the wind must have blown it because it had fallen in a certain direction. And if you look up there now, just the flooding and everything, a lot of the trees are dying or dead. And so it's even more unstable in a sense, for these things can keep coming down, all the debris and stuff. And my farmer friend, Timo, we actually submitted testimony, but he couldn't be here, but he's an avid farmer, I mean farmer and avid hunter. He had gone up a couple weeks ago, and he had seen a big log jam in the Hawaii, and he removed that, but he didn't see this. So this had just happened. So I think basically what we members and all of our ancestors and way before us have been using this system, and you know, our life is having to take care of it constantly, because wind blows, flood happens, nothing is, you know, permanent, so it's going to call for a lot of maintenance. So we need this right of entry to help maintain and take care of it. So, yeah, mahalo for recommending that we get this easement for gratis. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bobby Watari.
Hi. Good morning, Chair Case, members of the board. My name is Bobby Watari, born and raised in Analei, third generation taro farmer. I've been farming for over 50 years. Past 39 years, full-time for a living. My parents and grandparents have been farming since the early 50s. Most of the land...
Hang on 1 second. Oops, now you go. Sorry.
Most of the land that I farm on, is some is owned and others are leased. I'm grooming my stepson, Kaisen, right now to take over the farm someday. And I think restoring our existing water system is so critical, not only for the family livelihood and livelihood of other farmers, but to maintain our life and the community here in Waiole. We face many other challenges just to farm the land, and being able to access our traditional water system is a critical first step in helping us to recover after the devastating 2018 flood, which did a lot of damage. Mahalo for considering my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mahalo for coming back. How long you said you were working in the Loi?
Over 50 years.
You started when you were like 3?
I wish. 39 for living.
Thank you. Okay, Kaisen?
We grew up there.
Carrillo?
Carrillo.
Yeah. So thank you guys for listening to us and all the small farmers about our concerns about the water maintenance of our Native Hawaiian systems. My name is Kaisen Carrillo. I come from multiple generations of town farmers on both sides of my family. Starting on my mom's side, the Haradas, my great-grandfather Inichi Harada started farming. His daughter, Lily, who's my grandma, married a Fuktaihook. Both of my grandparents both still farm today in Honolulu Valley at 82 years old. Their daughter, Lillian, married Bobby, their stepdad, who hopefully gonna turn over the farm one day. Which basically leaves me, 27-year-old, fourth-generation Native Hawaiian taro farmer in Honolulu. I'm only one of three taro farmers who are under 35 years old. And I basically, raising a two-year-old daughter, is trying to help me cultivate the land as well. And recently, I just moved back to Kauai maybe 2 years ago. I was over here on Oahu working Royal Hawaiian Ballet. And I was like a lot of people, I ran away first thing once I could. Once I was high school, it was hard work, needed workers. And now, from a small boy, I started off picking apple snails for $2 a bucket. Mm-hmm. Now I can finally help with the harvest. And as an adult, I can use my education. I went to UH for business school and I got a hospitality degree. Trying to experiment with different products, taro chips, luau leaf, just to try and supplement the income that's being lost from the harvest, from all the silt and the floods. And I not only have to provide and repair the farm, but I gotta fend for my family and my daughter. It's been a difficult year. We have had some good things. We work with a nonprofit, Malama Kauai, which basically provides some high school students, college students, and community volunteers that help us repair the ditches, but up until now we haven't had that easement, so we're basically trying to repair things downstream, which doesn't help the problem, right? We're all sharing the ditch with water that's not there. So basically, if you say the easement is the fastest way for us to start and get repairs, immediate repairs done, and that's why I'm here to ask you to approve the easement today. Thank you.
Thank you.
And mahalo for being under 40.
Under 30.
Okay, Sierra Boro.
Hi there, Case and board members, good morning. First off, I'd like to just thank you folks for this opportunity to allow us to share our stories and to be here and let you know our mana'o, what's going on. I'm currently, as well, like Kaisen, under 30, so one of the younger generational farmers. My grandfather, Alfred Harada, he's been farming since like the late 50s, and his family before him as well have been farming kalo, and primarily, initially, was rice. Growing up, I was born and raised all over the farm. Like, loved living there, I just camped there, everything was just mud, taro patch clothes, and frogs and kalo. That's just life. And other than it being a livelihood of making money and living at this point, it's much more valuable to me than just that point of life. Growing into high school and everything, I had a different pathway. At a point, I was going to Washington State out of high school, doing nursing, and that's where everything turned for me. My turning point came home when my grandfather's health started to deteriorate, and it was an option to take over the family farm. And so in 2010, I did return home to Kauai, and legally took over the farm. My grandfather is still with me, and he still pretty much does a lot of the machinery work and all the prepping and stuff like that, and I just do like a lot of the labor work. And our family all still together, like my sister and my nephew, we all, it's family farm day, all day, every day. Along with that, you know, just since the flooding, as you've all heard already, the devastation that it's done to lo'i patches, to homes, to the farm itself, it's just been very detrimental and hard to just come back from. So we're just struggling and trying to just make it day by day. And as a hui now, formally, we've come together to, you know, patch those holes and be able to work within ourselves stronger and within the community to just, you know, engage in a lot more sturdy structures of the awai and the system itself. And in hopes we can just resilient and become persevered through all of this and come back and be able to, you know, do what we all love to do. And I just want to say thank you again and in support of the easement.
Thank you. I have a question.
Absolutely.
So you said, and other people said, and I know this has happened statewide, that obviously these were taro lo'i from time immemorial, and then were converted to rice in sort of the 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. And then your community switched back to kalo. What was the driver for it to switch back to kalo?
It was, my grandfather would say it was just less work. It wasn't as hard as planting rice. I don't know. It was like, I was too busy. And that's the funny thing, just growing up, it's like you don't realize, like, you're so busy having fun running around the lo'is and playing and everything. And then as you get older and it becomes a part of your livelihood, you know, just you really take in all those tactics, all those characters and morals that you've built growing up having fun, but learning the value of hard work, learning what kalo is, and just way more than just the money. It's so much more. So I just, my grandfather would always say it was just less harder than planting rice. Thank you.
Okay, Kapua Sprouts.
Aloha Chair Case, board members. Mahalo for your time today. I know you have a really long agenda, so I'll try to wrap up quickly for you. For the record, I'm Kapua Sprouts, and I'm here today in my official capacity as a professor at UH Manoa's William S. Richardson School of Law and the director of Kahuliao, our Native Hawaiian Law Center, as well as the director of our Environmental Law Clinic. And our clinic is actually a course that's offered to second and third year law students to prepare them for the practice of law. And this particular semester, we worked in partnership, well, the students worked in partnership with me and under the direction of me, as well as Leitani Peltier, who's our post-JD fellow and here with us today, because he co-teaches a class with me. And so for this class, we represent live clients, we do real work, which in addition to providing, I think, invaluable training for our students, helps to provide direct legal services for underrepresented communities. And this semester, we were so incredibly grateful to work with the Waiʻole Valley Taro Hui. I think you've already heard quite clearly what an incredibly special place this is. And so I think in many ways, our students may have gotten more out of this experience than we contributed, perhaps. But we were so grateful to partner with them, and also with the county. Lau Tabata played a huge role and continues to do that. And as some of you may know, I'm actually from Kauai, so these are my peeps. And it's really been a privilege to be able to do this. So I also really want to mahalo Ian Hirakawa and Linda Chow. They were incredibly helpful and patient with us and our students and our many inquiries. But basically, the students did the research to help put together both the nonprofit as well as actually put together the application for the easement. Ilani Tanigao, who's here today, worked really closely on helping the farmers with that. And so I also want to actually mahalo Oha. Oha has been so amazing in providing the research to be able to, you know, establish that this wasn't, you know, what time immemorial means in this specific place. I also wanted to mahalo Board Member Rorick for your mana'o and really recognizing the importance of the partnership between the farmers and DLNR on the board. They do an incredible amount of work all the time, whenever there's a windfall, whenever there's rain, whenever, you know, anything. And I think Kaisen made reference to the partnership that they have with Malama Kauai and how they really want to be able to expand into the watershed area and do more maintenance and stewardship. So I think in many ways, this really helps to build capacity within communities and is a wonderful example of co-management of our public trust resources. So in that sense, I think that the gratis rent is entirely appropriate given the significant investment of resources that the farmers make really on a daily basis. The only other thing that I would mention is that while we're deeply grateful for the 55-year term easement, you know, Board Member Oi, Board Member Gomes mentioned in perpetuity, and to the degree that you folks would like to consider that, we would gratefully accept it. I do think this is a fabulous partnership. We will continue to work really hard with Ian and Linda on the water lease, because I think that there's a lot more to be done on that. But I think as Board Member Rorick pointed out, there are many creative possibilities of how we can move forward in a way that's expeditious for the community members and that will be beneficial for all. So we hope you'll vote to approve the easement today. Mahalo.
I have a comment and a question. So first of all, thank you so much for your work with these folks. It's makes me want to go back to law school.
Yes, please come.
Although I get to do plenty of good stuff. No, seriously, it's been
a huge help, I know, for us to help kind of work through. We're all kind of finding our way here, and nobody's seen a flood like this, and how it affects, you know, uses that have been going on for a long time, and how we bridge
right.
our ancient systems and our modern systems.
Right.
So a couple of people have pointed out the importance of pulling up and being able to do work on this, and I know our folks are pretty fast here on the easement process, but I wonder if it might be helpful if we add a right of entry today, effective immediately, so that you know, while we're finalizing that paperwork, people can go up and start doing work under this.
Yeah, absolutely. It would be hugely helpful to add a right of entry now. The county and Naotapata in particular have been incredibly supportive, and Izaki has been great in expediting the survey, but that's not how I understand that it's in its final stages, but I also understand that it's been in its final stages for about 2 months now. So to the degree that we could have a right of entry immediately, effective today, that would be hugely helpful for all of us. Initially, we had requested both an easement and a right of entry so that they could continue maintenance on a regular basis. I understand the concern and the difficulty of the farmers, especially because our class only runs on a semester basis, and we're actually already Pau and Ui already graduated, but she still came today. So we're officially Pau, you know, the difficulty of navigating the legal and administrative process, as you all well know, is so complicated for our community members that we would be concerned about them having to come back for right of entry every year. So to the degree that maintenance could be included as part of the regular easement, we would be grateful for that. But a right of entry now so they could go up would be even better. Mahalo.
Okay, we'll talk to Ian about it when he comes back. Okay. Yes, Dan.
It would be very helpful for us if you help us. Because given your background and the specialties of UH Law School, you're uniquely situated because of your understanding of the law and our history, that as we go forward on the low eaves, I think we would be honored if you would help us, you and your staff and your students. That's the next generation for us. So, a right of entry to go in right away, and that's fine. As far as in perpetuity, the problem we have is that we have a policy that we give, depending on what kind of leases there are or rights of entry, we give road rights of entry maybe 55 or 65 years, but I don't think we give it a perpetuity, because then it becomes permanent, right? That's a problem. The Wapaole. So we don't do that, but maybe you folks can help us build this model, because what we do with this one,
thank you, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
Yeah, I had a question.
Yeah.
Actually, you anticipated one of my questions, which was whether or not you were satisfied with the 55 years, so that's good. And then, but the second question was, in your opinion, whether or not Kauai and the Hanalei region outdoes white people.
Well, in the interest of full disclosure, as a child of Halele'a, It's my understanding that actually 85% of the kalo that's commercially grown in Hawaii is from Hanalei Valley. But we welcome. But, you know, the more the better. I would love for what's cultivated in Hanalei to just be a small part of us grown throughout our paiaina. Any other questions?
Mahalo, no, that was, thank you again.
Mahalo. My AGs. Yes, sir.
If you're contemplating a perpetual easement, I think that might be a little problem under the Sunshine Law, because the actual agenda item says a term non-exclusive easement.
Chair, I don't want to call it a lease.
Easement.
Yeah, I don't want to call it a lease.
No, it's we're not. It's not a lease. What he's saying is it's a term in the title. It's a term easement. So we might have to come back and amend later.
To the degree that creates any issues, we would be happy to accept today a right of entry and a term non-exclusive easement for 55 years, and would be happy to keep working with Ian to come back for a one in perpetuity at a later date.
Let me ask Ian. The right of entry, is that usually a delegated authority to the chairs to serve the best interest of the state? Because that's not also not part of the agenda.
Yeah, but this would only serve to, I mean, I think what I'm understanding is we're just going to do an interim one until the easement is executed.
Yes.
So, and the county already actually has one, but if we want to add, like if the Hui members want to go and do work, we would just do a separate one for them until the easement. So it would fit within the parameters of the, I think it would fit within what's considered today.
I don't see the word lease in the...
No, we're not.
There's no lease.
It's not a lease, it's an easement.
Okay, well that's what, we don't want to use the word lease.
Yeah, right. I didn't use the word lease.
But what he's talking about is, he's saying, the discussion about making this a permanent easement is not in the title of the...
Okay, and I don't think we want to make it permanent, but... I don't think we want to call it a lease.
Right, we'll call it a non-exclusive
55-year. Some members do want to make a permanent easement, but we have to just do an amendment later.
I think we'll be fine now. We don't know.
Do the term easement now, the way it's written, with a right of entry.
Immediate right of entry.
We can.
We can.
And then come back and just do an amendment to make it permanent.
Yep. And I just would note that the right of entry will be helpful too. This is, you know, the Hui is in many ways, you know, a dream client or community. They actually want to get insurance, things like that. So the right of entry and the easement will be in their name will be very helpful. Even though the county, as has already been referenced, does have an emergency right of entry, and they are taking the lead on the permitting for the restoration and repairs.
Okay. Thank you.
Any questions?
All right.
Thank you.
Maybe Lenny would like to testify,
okay.
Actually.
Please. And anyone else, if anyone else.
Thank you so much.
Aloha. My name is Ubi Tanigawa Lum. I'm originally from Makua, Maui. And as Kapua mentioned, I just graduated a little under 2 weeks ago from the William S. Richardson School of Law with certificates in Native Hawaiian Law and Environmental Law. Mahalo for having us here today. And during my time there at Richardson, I was fortunate enough to take the Environmental Law Clinic from Professor Sproat, and I was fortunate to be able to work with the Hui on this project, on this application. And during, as a hula practitioner and as someone who's deeply passionate about Native Hawaiian and environmental law, during my studies there, it was frustrating and troubling to see sort of our government struggle with actualizing its duties, particularly under the public trust. But in working with this Hui and Ian, your staff, I'm heartened to see the staff submittal and the recommendation, and it sort of renewed my faith in the process. So I guess the only thing that I have to add is my experience with the Hui as a student. I think the Hui is really this great illustration of not only the long-standing and sort of understated role of the kalo farmer in Hawaii, across Hawaii Pai Aina, but as well as our collective success. And the Hui, they often thanked the clinicians for our help, but really I felt privileged to be able to be a part of this project with them. And they bridged gaps, you know, they brought together law professors, law students, and various members of the government and government officials from the county to the state. So that was a really great capstone for my time in law school. And I think it's really hard to articulate how special not only the people of the Hui are, but the community itself and the practice of stewarding this lo'i kalo system. So I wanted to share a mele that I was inspired to write after our second site visit to Waioli. It's called Aiai Waioli Ke Aloha Aina. Aiai Waioli Ke Aloha Aina. Ia aina momona no ka hui kalo. There at Waioli is aloha aina, that fertile land for the hui kalo. Hue ia kupa'a lava pono, ili ili leo hone kapoli. United steadfast and just enough, gathered as small pebbles, soft and sound but together strong and held close. Pumehana wai pa ulu vehi vehi, ho'opili no ka Waiolu o Waioli. Wai pa is cherished, lush and verdant, a companion for the refreshing waters of Waioli. Oli oli, kiano lani, no kamahi ai, ila ila no vao me ku'u mahalo. Kiano lani is delightful for the farmers. It is there that I am filled with gratitude. Hano hano kalihiwai kapua ala, kui ia ilei no ka lahui. Famous is kalihiwai for its fragrant flower, strung into a lei for the lahui. Haina kapuana a ilohe ia, Aiai Waioli Ke Aloha Aina. Told is the refrain and it is heard. There at Waioli is Aloha Aina. Mm. So I just wanted to extend my gratitude to the board for your work, not only to protect our land and our resources, but for your work, especially with this Hui today. And that's kind of the reason why I went to law school, to see our laws and our officials, our county, our community and our practices work together, coexist, and support each other. So I respectfully urge you to vote today to approve this application.
Thank you so much.
Mahalo.
Mahalo. And mahalo for that many.
I have a question.
Yes.
Would you happen to have a contact number for the Waihuli Valley Hui that I could call?
Yes. I have to look it up.
Okay. Good. She'll get back to you.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Anybody else want to testify on this? Okay, if not, all right.
Tommy.
Ian, do you want to? Well, maybe we don't need. Are we ready to make a motion?
Yeah.
Tommy, you want to make a motion?
Move to approve with the amendment of adding an immediate credit entry.
Okay.
Second.
All right, any further discussion?
I have one concern, and that is that. We, in addition to granting the motion with the amendment, that we also have a condition that we continue to proceed with determining the eventual permanent language for this right of entry and easement, because we need to determine whether we're going to give it for 65 years.
So that would have to, right now it's 55 years, and I think the expectation now is that they would bring it back to the land board very shortly here to amend this, to amend the term to permanent easement.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is what we've been discussing.
A permanent easement, I think that we need to be careful about calling it permanent. Sounds like to be fee simple.
So usually you call them perpetual easement.
Sorry, perpetual.
We can call it perpetual easement, but the intent is that, like our other easements, we have paid easements up to 65 years.
This would be an exception from our current practice, although consistent with prior practice.
Okay.
Because in the past we used to get up perpetual easement for other issues.
For what?
For other. We used to get perpetual easements for roadways, we used to get perpetual easements for walls. It's not like this would be the first case.
I think the difference here is that this presumably has always been,
Put it there, I'm open-minded to calling a perpetual easement, provided that the staff documents that it's been this way, Ikawapaoli, it's always been this way, that they've had access from the earliest historical times to this area, and then that made the state land now, but it wasn't state land when they started. It was historical land under the king. So if they had access rights for the beginning of the earliest contact, then I'm okay with that.
Okay. So for today, the motion is to approve it with the amendment to add an immediate right of entry. And that motion has been seconded.
Yes.
Let's vote.
I have one more comment. I want to point out that it was Kauai that first formalized a co-management system for marine resources in Haena, and that this kind of qualifies as one of the first co-management of terrestrial resources and water resources, and I think that it's a precedent-setting one and an important one to note for the record.
Great, thank you.
Yay, Kauai.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you so much, everyone. Really appreciate it. Let's take a short break. You don't get the really nice stuff too often.
No.
Yeah, no, that was awesome.
No, really great. This is really great.
See, I don't mind.
Mahalo.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. 11:35 break.